The following is an Auburn Network.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 27th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It is not a gorgeous day in Auburn. It was okay earlier, but if you're hanging around Auburn Opelika, it is about to get nasty for a little bit. The skies have gone dark, the wind has picked up, and the rain is coming. So if you are out and about, be careful, get where you're going, and probably stay inside for just a little bit. And as I always say, don't use me as your weatherman, but it's looking kind of nasty out there, so be sure to take it easy and be sure that you are being safe. We were not here yesterday for Memorial Day. Hope you had a good weekend and a long weekend, and were able to appreciate why you had the day off for those who have fallen in service for the military of the United States. And so it's such an important thing that we get to celebrate, and hopefully you were able to enjoy the extra day off. And we are back for what is a jam-packed Tuesday afternoon here on ESPN 106.7. We'll tell you all about it coming up here in just a little bit. But joining me in the studio, as he does every single day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. I almost said happy Monday, but no, happy Tuesday. Hopefully, yeah, as you mentioned, everybody had a very good Memorial Day, Memorial Day weekend. Happy Tahad Pettiford week for those that celebrate as you continue to count down the hours, the minutes, and the seconds. How many of us have the notifications turned on for every single possible platform just waiting for the run it back video? You feel like that's kind of where everybody sits, and there you go. It didn't take very long there. Jacob Goetz, not your weatherman, but one for one so far,
yeah,
on the day as the rain begins to absolutely pour down. But no, really excited to be able to dive into everything today as Auburn is not only set to host a regional, they got the fourth overall national seed. So what does that look like? If Auburn's able to win inside Plainsman Park, they will host a super regional. Coastal Carolina and Florida are the 1 and 2 on the other side of the bracket. We'll talk about all of those games. Talk about some of the other SEC teams that are hosting in the field, as well as 6 of the top 8 teams are from the Southeastern Conference. A couple possible SEC super regional matchups. Also going to talk with Cooper McMurray. Jacob was able to talk with him a little bit ago. Our weekly conversation with head coaches, assistant coaches, and players. Really excited to be able to get Cooper McMurray, one of the leaders on this team, before arguably the biggest series of the year. With a couple of teams coming to Plainsman Park, we'll talk about those. We'll talk about some of the toughest regionals in our opinions, and as well as some statistics that build it up. Who has the hardest, who has the easiest possible path to get to Omaha? We'll talk about all that here in hour number one.
Yep, that is coming up. And so if you would like to be a part of the show, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Since we were not here yesterday, we got an interview coming up in just a little bit. We want to hear from you. We'll go ahead and open up those phone lines at 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. You look at what Auburn did. Auburn baseball, you mentioned it. They were sitting in the selection show. We learned late Sunday night that Auburn would be hosting a regional officially. We knew that. That was not anything We all but knew that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Then you had the selection show yesterday where Auburn found out not only are they hosting a regional, they're not only a top 8 seed, they're the 4th seeded team in college baseball in the upcoming NCAA tournament. And I think that was a surprise to a lot of folks just based off of the projections that we had been looking at, projections that we had been talking about over the last several days going into into the weekend where it seemed like Auburn was pretty much in between 6 and 8, right? We thought they were going to be 6, 7, or 8. There was some concern with Auburn fans that maybe Auburn would not have gotten a top 8 seed, national seed, in the eyes of the committee. And turns out, not only did they get that, the fourth overall seed in the NCAA tournament, I think it came as a surprise to some folks.
You think that it does just because of most recently the recency bias, losing the series at Ole Miss the way that you did, but I think that Sunday, the getaway game, ended up being really, really important to the eyes of the committee, of those that made and were on top of the decisions, especially with Ole Miss going all the way to the SEC championship up in Hoover. I think they got a pretty good seed, did the Ole Miss Rebels. But you go and you look at some more of these things, and it's things that we've talked about, where Auburn, you feel like, was the same way with basketball. They were number one in RPI for 7-8 weeks throughout the hardest part of their schedule. And not only did you survive it, but you were able to win some big-time games in front of it. And then you were able to take just about every single series behind it, that toughest part of your schedule as well. You look at the RPI. You look at the strength of schedule. You look at what they were able to do against some of those teams. And then you begin to realize that it makes a little bit more sense. It was just one of the things of, well, all of the conversation of, can this many SEC teams get in? Or how is it looking if you take the full body of work versus how you're playing right now? I think it was a little bit of both, but I don't think many Auburn fans complain of where you're at right now.
No, and I think Auburn absolutely deserved to be a top 8 seed in the country. It was just, you saw it pop up that Auburn was a top 4 seed before the selection show came on, and it was like, oh, okay, awesome. I mean, this is an Auburn team that went 17-13 in conference play. This is an Auburn team that took the series against Vanderbilt, which is the number one overall team. This is an Auburn team that beat Georgia Tech twice in midweek games and Troy, who got snubbed, by the way. This is an Auburn team that beat Alabama, swept LSU, right? Beat Mississippi State, beat Tennessee, and competed with Ole Miss and probably should have won that series, but they didn't. I mean, this is an Auburn team that's a very, very good squad. And I just think that maybe we had gotten convinced that it wasn't going to happen, or there was a fear that it wasn't going to happen, but Auburn absolutely deserves to be a top 8 seed. And you can argue about where they are, but overall, I like the regional that Auburn got, and I'm sure most of you have seen the bracket by now. If not, just look it up, NCAA baseball bracket, where you have so many SEC teams that have made the field, Christian. 13 teams from the SEC, the most ever by a single conference. How many times have we said that over the past year or so, have made it to the postseason, to the regional round, where Vanderbilt is your number one, Texas is your number two. You continue to scroll through and kind of look at everything and see who all falls where. Arkansas being the three, Auburn being the four, so the SEC claims the top 4 seeds. North Carolina is the 5. Okay, North Carolina being the 5. LSU is the 6 seed in there. Georgia out of the SEC is the 7 seed. You continue to look around at what the 8 and 9 seeds look like. Oregon State is the 8. Florida State is the 9. Ole Miss out of the SEC is the 10. You look elsewhere in this tournament. Clemson the 11. Oregon is the 12. I think that's a really good baseball team. Coastal Carolina at 13. I don't agree with that. I think they got the short end of the stick on that one. Tennessee is the 14 seed. Okay, and then 15 is UCLA, and 16 is Southern Miss. So those are your hosts. Of course, top 8 will be hosting a super if they win, and that sets up some really fascinating super regional possibilities. But outside of the Auburn regional, which we'll talk about here momentarily, which regional excites you the most? Which one sets up to have some interesting games, an interesting champion, or what could be some fun super regionals. Which regional sticks out to you?
The Coastal Carolina one, I think, is going to be a whole lot of fun. Obviously, the Auburn fans are going to be paying a lot of attention to it, simply because if Auburn wins their side of the regional, Auburn is paired up with Coastal in that 4-13 matchup. But Coastal Carolina hosts, they host Florida in Eastern Carolina, or East Carolina, which I think could be one of those sleeper teams. I think Florida is a very, very solid team as well. I think there are three teams that could win that regional, and you could come up here on Monday, and I wouldn't be overly surprised just simply because of the postseason success that all three teams have had in that one regional.
I think Coastal got hosed, man. I mean, I think pull up there. I had their RPI, my computer reset. I had the RPI pulled up. Coastal was top eight in RPI. I mean, they were flirting with the idea of being a national seed, a top eight seed, and all of a sudden they dropped down to 13. Not only that, they have to host, like you said, East Carolina and Florida. Florida's one of the hottest teams in college baseball right now, and East Carolina is a really, really good team.
And Coastal Carolina beats Southern Miss in the Sun Belt Championship, too.
Who was one of, if not the hottest teams in college baseball. They had like an 18-game winning streak or something going into that game. And so then your reward, if you're Coastal Carolina, oh, congratulations. You beat a really nasty East Carolina team and a dominant SEC team in Florida. Congratulations. Welcome to the Plains. Welcome to Plainsman Park. Welcome to the Auburn Tigers, the fourth-ranked team in the country. I feel for Coastal, man. I really, really do. I think that was a team that was looking to be a top-eight team in the country, and so that regional is very exciting. But I look at the Oxford regional. I look at the fact that Ole Miss, as a 10 seed, they have to host Georgia Tech, who I don't think deserved to be going to that regional.
Did you see their reaction when their name was called?
Yeah, they didn't do anything. They just sat there because they were in shock.
Yeah.
That was not right. Georgia Tech should not be the 2 seed going to Oxford. They were talking about hosting was Georgia Tech. And now they got to go and play the Ole Miss Rebels alongside of Western Kentucky, who's no pushover either. So that's the regional that I look at. Man, that one could be a lot of fun there in Oxford. I don't think Georgia Tech deserved to be there. I think they deserve to be higher than that, but that'll be a lot of fun too.
The Oregon State one is an interesting topic of conversation as well, just with Southern Cal and TCU being some of those teams. Southern California and Oregon State would be a fantastic matchup because of the sites, because of the relevance, and because of just those two teams having a lot of success. You've seen Corvallis host regionals and super regionals, but again, with the Oregon State controversy that happened with who was hosting who, with one of the teams going 4-0 against the other team, Oregon State got the benefit of the doubt, but hosting TCU in Southern California, that's another very, very fun one to watch.
How do you feel about Vanderbilt being the top overall seed? They're number one in RPI. I get that. And they went 42-16 overall this season. That's really good. And they were several games above 500 in the SEC. I don't know. Something doesn't feel right about Vanderbilt being the number one team. This is one of the quietest, most silent one seeds we've seen in quite some time. I mean, it's like we talk about in college basketball sometimes where it's like, oh, where did that team come from? And Vanderbilt has just quietly won games. And I feel like many Auburn fans probably wrote this team off and forgot about them because Auburn beat them in the SEC opener, which shows how big that was coming and looking back on it now. But here you are. You've got Vanderbilt as the number one overall seed. Their reward is hosting a really, really good Louisville team.
I think Vanderbilt is...
Don't count on ETSU either.
No, but I think that Tim Corbin is one of the best in the business, and he has been for a very, very long time. He started coaching at Vanderbilt in 2003, and he was with the team when they went through that dominant stretch on the baseball diamond. Had a couple off years just simply because so many of their guys that they were signing were just making the jump straight into the minor leagues, not going to college. Then they began figuring everything out, and then NIL became a factor, and obviously now Vanderbilt is one of those top teams. And I think especially with the SEC tournament, how they finished the regular season versus how Texas finished the regular season and went into the NCAA tournament, I thought that the Texas win that they were able to get in the first round, I thought that that would possibly get them over unless Vanderbilt were to win the national or to win the SEC championship, which they did, which goes to show you that there is still stock in it, at least for baseball, because otherwise I think Vanderbilt's probably a two or a three, or the two or three overall seed, with Texas and Arkansas probably right above them. But with Vanderbilt going that far, I don't hate it. I don't disagree with it. And, I think Corbin's one of the best coaches in the game.
Yeah, you look at teams outside of the SEC. Again, North Carolina is the first non-SEC team. They're a five, or the five, hosting Oklahoma and Nebraska. That's pretty tough there in Chapel Hill. Oregon out of the Big Ten is in there as a host right now. UCLA is in there as a host right now out of the Big Ten. Other Big Ten teams that made it to the tournament, USC is in there as well. But think about this, Christian. Nebraska is the only team from the previous Big Ten Conference, from, I'm not saying the original, but the old Big Ten Conference. Nebraska's the only team from that conference to make it to the tournament, because Oregon, UCLA, and USC just joined the conference in this past academic and athletic season. That's pretty wild to think about. I mean, not that the Big Ten prides itself on baseball success, but they've had good teams in the past, and the fact that Nebraska's the only one from the old Big Ten and three former Pac-12 teams, RIP, made it to the tournament wearing a new patch on their jersey.
Yeah, again, I mean, it shows you the difference in priority now, right, with some of the big sports and how baseball's not as prioritized. But man, I mean, just again, looking at these regional teams, you feel like there are some that got a much easier ticket, a much easier road.
I know,
look at Southern Miss. Look at their host. They are now hosting Alabama, who is the 13th ranked RPI. You then have Miami, who's right behind them, and even Columbia, who is, oh gosh, I just had it pulled up, 62nd. That's a scary regional. You could have three or four teams. Even Columbia could be one of those teams if they have their two aces that get on a mound and just dominates. It could be a very, very fun regional. You feel like you could have conversations about all four of these teams or all of these regional setups for what feels like forever.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this, the SEC teams that made it, and break down Auburn's regional a little bit, since they'll take on Central Connecticut on Friday. The other two teams in there, NC State and Stetson. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open. First show of the week. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Tell us your thoughts on Auburn baseball hosting a regional, being the fourth overall seed and having the chance to host a super regional. We want to hear from you. So give us a call or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And diving deeper into what Auburn's regional looks like, and a reminder coming up at 2:30, we're going to have my conversation with Cooper McMurray. Talked to him earlier this morning from Auburn Baseball about the regular season, the short trip to Hoover, but then the reaction and kind of what everybody's preparing for this weekend at Plainsman Park. And so really good interview with him. We're looking forward to having that for you coming up at 2:30. But Auburn's going to play on Friday night, 6 o'clock at Plainsman Park. They're going to play Central Connecticut State. Then they're going to have either NC State or Stetson. That'll be the first game of the day on Friday. I believe they play at 1 o'clock on Friday. And then Auburn will play Central Connecticut State, 6 o'clock that night. And looking at it as a whole, Christian, I don't hate Auburn's regional pairings at all. I think Central Connecticut is probably down there for near the bottom of the teams that made the tournament. NC State's no pushover, and Stetson is just kind of there, in my opinion. And so you feel like Auburn should have a good advantage and a good chance to beat all of these teams, however they end up playing them. And I don't feel like Auburn has that thing like some of these other regionals do, where the top team is like, man, I can't believe that team made it in our regional. That's going to be tough. I just don't feel like Auburn has that.
No, again, when you're looking at NC State, they are 41st in RPI, 34th actually in the RPI. It was Miami that was 41st, but they are 34th in the RPI, and that's Auburn's. Again, that's Auburn's 2-seed. When you have a couple of these, like Southern Miss, who is hosting the 13th ranked RPI and then the 29th RPI, all in that one regional, you feel like Auburn, again, getting that 4-seed, it naturally should be a little bit easier. Baseball America, again, we look at D1 Baseball and Baseball America for a lot of the projections. They have also ranked all 64 teams in the bracket. North Carolina State is considered their 27th best team in the country or in this postseason. Stetson at 45th, and then Connecticut Central at 60th. So the fourth, quote-unquote, worst team in the tournament. That being said, I know you were able to do a little bit of digging. You found their stats, and just like you can imagine it being, some of these younger and the smaller schools got a couple arms that can go on the mound.
Yeah, and we'll talk some more about this as we go throughout the week. Lindsey Crosby is going to join us tomorrow for a good baseball power hour, talk a lot of Auburn baseball, talk the regionals, maybe even some predictions in there as well. We'll talk some MLB with him. But, yes, they have got a dude, as you would imagine, Central Connecticut State does. His name is Vincent Borghese. I hope that's how you pronounce that. I've never heard it, so I couldn't find it anywhere. But Vincent Borghese is the guy that I would assume they will be throwing in their game on Friday night against Auburn. He's got 85 and a third innings pitched this season. He has, listen to this, 89 strikeouts to just 23 walks.
Wow.
That's the ratio you look at. You know how we talk about the assist to turnover ratio for point guards? You look at strikeouts to walk ratios for pitchers, in my opinion. That's nearly 4-1 in strikeout to walk ratio. When you can pound the zone and you don't give up free bases, you win baseball games, especially at the level that Central Connecticut State does. Now, going up against an SEC team, it's going to be a lot tougher, and we're going to talk about how Auburn's offense has to get back going again, and you've got to get production 1-9 and things like that, especially in a regional setting, but that's going to be the man. I mean, teams are only hitting 268 against him. He's their man. He's, again, thrown 85 and a third innings pitch. That's a lot of innings, man, for college baseball. So I expect Auburn to throw, or I expect Auburn to see him on Friday. But that leads me into this conversation, which we can have with Lindsey some more tomorrow. I expect Auburn to throw Dutton on Friday. I expect Auburn to throw their guy, throw your ace, because winning game one in the regional and or the super regional is so crucially important. We know the stats on a three-game series. The winner of game one goes on to win like 78% of the time or something like that. And in a regional, if you win game one, you can save yourself one, if not two, games by winning the first game, because you can win it in as many as three. If you lose game one, you have to win four games after that to try and get out of the regional and make it to the super.
Yeah, when you're looking at this Blue Devils team, they hit .334 as a squad. Again, not crazy power numbers,
right,
but a team that's high contact, low strikeouts, an on-base percentage of over .440, that'll win you some ball games, and that's why they're 31-15. You can't go into it like, you're not saying that this is how it, the mindset you have, but it's how it went down against Penn a couple of years ago. It's the perfect example of a team that wasn't necessarily going to hit it over the wall, but a team that was just going to spray it around the field, that was going to do the small ball things right, that was going to get a guy on, get him over, and then get him in. And then you had a guy on the mound that you threw like through a ghost ball because Auburn couldn't touch it. You feel like it's just that you're flirting with danger if that's the case, and all of a sudden, rather than playing from the winner's bracket, you're playing with your season on the line in your home stadium.
It's just not the place to be, man. Winning that first game is so crucial and so important. And We've seen Auburn twice now in a row try to flirt and steal a game with not throwing their ace in the first game, and it hasn't worked out. We saw it in Oxford, and we saw it in the SEC tournament. Sam Dutton didn't pitch in the SEC tournament. And so you hope that the rest for him will come back to benefit you and to help you. But we've seen Auburn try to steal a game twice in a row, and it hasn't worked out. And this is postseason play. I mean, you can't flirt with that anymore. You can't risk that. Go out and dominate Central Connecticut State and then play with Chatterton on Saturday night against more than likely NC State. Or if you're lucky enough and you do end up playing a team like Stetson, then cool. Then you feel like you're in a good spot. I just don't see why you would want to risk it in postseason play.
I would not be surprised if they save Dutton for Saturday. I think that you trust the offense more in a game one. And I think if you went with Chatterton, and I know that's the risky game that I was just talking about, that you don't necessarily want to play, but you feel like this offense coming off of a subpar game in the tournament, now you're getting back to your home stadium. I think you still save the ace for game two for NC State, knowing that you could see them three times, possibly. That being said, I don't think you would hear boos if it were to be Dutton that walked out on Friday night.
You got to think, too, the last two performances from Sam Dutton have not been his best. So do you put him back on his normal Friday night? Do you get him back in there as quickly as possible? There's a lot of things to discuss and for this Auburn team to realize before they hit the field on Friday night. And a guy that will be on the field Friday night is Cooper McMurray. We talk to him from Auburn Baseball coming up next.
On the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. We continue our weekly conversations with members of Auburn baseball, and joining us here on ESPN 106.7 is one of the experienced guys on this Auburn baseball team. He is Cooper McMurray, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. Cooper, it's great to have you back on the radio station, my man. I know it's an exciting time for you and the guys over there at Plainsman Park.
Yes, sir. Definitely. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, there's a lot to go over, and we're going to do our best to get through it. And so if you were to kind of sit back for a second while you have a couple of days before the regional gets started, and we'll talk about all of that here shortly, but if you're able to sit back and just kind of look back on this season, how would you summarize it up to this point? How would you kind of put it into words on what you guys were able to do in non-conference play, in SEC play, and then the short trip to Hoover, but now getting to host a regional? I mean, how would you kind of put that in your own words on what this season was like for you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, sounds kind of cliche, but I think the word that comes to mind would be gritty. You know, I think that the schedule that Coach Thompson and the staff put together, obviously, you know, was a fantastic schedule, playing really good non-conference teams, you know, going to Arlington and playing Oregon State and Baylor and Ohio State. And then, you know, obviously the SEC gauntlet that we went through, you know, just brought us closer together as a team, you know, going on the road and playing, I think, four of the five road series we had or hosts. You know, which is, you know, pretty remarkable. But, you know, and us going and being able to beat a couple of those teams on the road, and then, you know, our home record of 12-3 in the league was huge for us. But, yeah, you know, I think it just speaks to the program itself and the dedication that we all have to this program.
38-13 overall for Auburn baseball this season. You finished 17-13 in conference play. You mentioned your home record as a whole, 25-6, which we're hoping to improve on that over the next several weeks in postseason play. But was there a particular stretch that was your favorite, Cooper? I mean, whether it was some of those games in Arlington or whether it was going on the road and beating Tennessee or getting to win some big games at home in Plainsman Park, was there a favorite stretch for you this season for you and your squad?
I think it would be hard to say that LSU weekend at home at Plainsman Park wasn't my favorite one of the year, just because of, you know, how we played, and you know, the crowd was amazing. But yeah, you know, going to Knoxville and dealing with that weather and that rain all weekend was, you know, it was pretty brutal during the middle of it. But you know, looking back at it, I think it brought this team close together. It allowed us to, you know, fight through some adversity together, you know, which in the SEC, there's adversity every weekend. Doesn't matter if you're at home or if you're on the road, but I think those two series kind of stood out to me, and just, you know, how proud of the guys I was.
Well, we won't go super in-depth on it, but you guys went to Hoover last week for the SEC tournament, where on Thursday you took on a Texas A&M team, one that really caught fire down the stretch. And back-and-forth game, they struck out. Texas A&M batter struck out, I believe, like 14 times, I think, and you guys had a couple of solo shots, but just couldn't overcome one big swing of the bat there against Texas A&M. So kind of talk us through what that game was like, but then also what a week's worth of rest is going to be like for you as well.
Yeah, you know, the SEC tournament is, you know, it's what you want to win, and so that was very disappointing, and just the way that we kind of let our offense kind of let our pitchers down in that game. You know, they threw the ball great, like you said, one swing kind of beat us, which is something that you don't want to have happen. But you know, it's baseball, and you know, sometimes you're on the short end of the stick. But you know, getting back home and getting to sleep in our own beds, not too bad, but just being able to rest up and, you know, kind of reset the mind and reset the body and focus on this week.
We're talking with Auburn baseball's Cooper McMurray here on ESPN 106.7. And before we talk about what's coming up this weekend and beyond, want to dive into some of your numbers here for just a second. I mean, this season at Auburn, hitting .329, you've got 14 homers, 57 RBIs. I mean, you've been one of the go-to guys offensively for this lineup, whatever the order may be. You've been one of the go-to guys. What's it been like for you this year? Maybe something different this year that's really helped you see the baseball the way you are right now?
Yeah, you know, it's been fun. You know, when you got guys in the lineup in front of you and behind you, like an Ike Irish or, you know, a Cade Blue, or, you know, and we have those three freshmen that have played fantastic all season for us. You know, it makes my job a lot easier and makes my confidence go up, and everyone's confidence goes up. You know, a lot of people say hitting is, you know, contagious. And sure, I think that's correct. You know, when you got a guy like Ike Irish hitting in front of you, it's a pretty good treat to watch. And, you know, I'm lucky that he's on our team.
Yeah, you get to sit and watch everybody wave their hands through the stadium and go kind of crazy before you got to step up in there. Takes a little pressure off, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Well, I don't know if anybody's got a better walk-up song. I mean, I'll even admit, it's not a song that I'm like overly a fan of, but the fans and you guys have made it such a big deal now, the guys in the dugout and things like that. I mean, everybody starts going crazy, and I expect to see that this weekend too.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun, definitely. Yeah, but I'm kind of in that boat with you. When he first had that walk-up song, I was like, okay, I kind of like it, kind of don't, and then the whole dugout started, you know, waving their hands and arms, and I'm kind of jealous because I don't get to do it because I'm on deck. So I gotta focus and pay attention, but I can't wave my arms in the air.
Yeah, I totally get it. And it's one of those things where it's just baseball, right? It's so, for people that aren't baseball fans, they would look at it and say, that's so dumb, that's so weird, why are they doing that? But everybody that's there, and it's so like, encapsulated in it. It's just so fun. And I know you guys get involved in that. That seems to be a contagious thing, like you talked about. And the fact that you're hitting as well as you are, and as with Ike, of course, doing the things that he's doing, you guys are a huge 1-2 punch for this offense. And it helped you guys win a lot of games this year, especially in the SEC. And all of that was able to come to fruition where you sat inside of the club yesterday and watched this team get a selection bid, not just to be a host of a regional, but a top 4 seed in all of college baseball. What does that mean for you and the guys to be one of the top 4 teams in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, I mean, it's a dream come true, you know. You know, you want to play postseason ball in your own park. And I think that, you know, us getting that top 4, a lot of people probably think it's surprising, but I think that speaks volume to, you know, the schedule that we had and the gauntlet we ran through. And it just speaks to how, you know, playing good teams is rewarding when you play good. So I think that was huge for all of us. And, you know, I'm just happy for our guys. They deserve it. And, you know, we're all ready to get to work on Friday.
Oh, I would say just looking at the non-conference schedule, something you and I have talked about, wins over Troy, and that Oregon State win now looks so big with them being where they are. And then, you know, a couple of wins over, you know, Alabama State and Georgia Tech and things like that. I mean, Jacksonville State, like, those are big wins in non-conference play, whether it's before the season or I guess before SEC play starts or in the midweeks. I mean, you have to take those games seriously, and I think you guys did, and I think you guys got rewarded for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, a lot of teams would, you know, kind of maybe not schedule, maybe schedule these better teams in the midweek. But, you know, Coach Thompson's all about playing the best and playing our best every day. So it's really just kind of being consistent. And yeah, going to work every day with Coach Thompson and the guys has been a dream come true.
Well, I know you're not allowed to look this far ahead, but we're going to ask you to do it here briefly. You get to host a regional this weekend at Plainsman Park. We'll talk about the other teams in just a moment. But the idea that if you guys win this weekend, you get to host a super regional at Plainsman Park for the first time in program history. 3-game set to go to Omaha. I won't even be able to put it into words, and I get paid to do that. But you guys are going to be able to do it to a whole nother level if you're able to get there. I know that's a big opportunity.
Yeah, you know, that's why you play the game. You know, you play the game to win. And yeah, like you said, not looking too forward. But yeah, you know, I think that would be pretty cool. Obviously, first time in program history would be a big deal for this program. You know, our fans deserve it. This program deserves it. And frankly, our ballpark deserves it. I mean, those renovations have changed this program. And you know, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully.
Auburn is one of the 7 programs in the country to host a regional in the last 4 seasons. That will continue this weekend when Stetson, NC State, and Central Connecticut State all come to the Plains for games this weekend. Auburn will be playing Friday night, 6 p.m. at Plainsman Park. That'll be the second game of the day. Then the loser's game will be first Saturday, winner's game to follow and beyond. Have you been able to look into any of these teams yet, Cooper? I know you guys just figured it out, and probably a lot of that to be going on this week. But your first opponent, Central Connecticut State, on Friday night.
Yes, sir. I think, you know, we had a couple hours break after our after the selection show before practice yesterday. So, you know, I know that our staff is, you know, our staff's the best in the country. So that, you know, they've been hammering it. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, watching a little bit of NC State throughout the year, you know, it's 3 really good ball clubs that are coming in town. So yeah, we got to be playing our best ball. And you know, this point of the year, it's win or go home. So. There's no more, you know, we'll wait and try to figure it out. Be patient. It's go time. So, you know, getting the guys focused up and ready is going to be huge. But, yeah, you know, 3 really good ball clubs coming in, and we got to play really good baseball.
For a guy like you who has been around the game for so long, and you've been at Auburn for several years now and went through what last year was and the turnaround that it has become, I mean, what does it mean for you to see all of that, to be a part of all of that, and just see it now come into postseason play? I mean, there's been a lot that's happened throughout your career, but here you are at the top of the game and a chance to really make a serious run.
Yeah, you know, after last year, you know, deciding whether to, you know, come back or, you know, try my luck in pro ball, you know, this is exactly why I came back. You know, this is, I love this university and this program, till the day I die. You know, I'm forever in debt to Coach Thompson for and Coach Nonnemaker for giving me a chance. And I'm super grateful for it. You know, and we're just ready to go. I think it's going to be a fun weekend. And Coach Thompson always talks about playing consistently. So, you know, that's the message this week is playing consistently and, you know, putting our best foot forward for these last, you know, hopefully 3-4 weeks of the season.
That ballpark's going to be something special on Friday night, huh, Cooper? That place is going to be packed out.
Yes, sir. I can't wait. I've been thinking about it.
That's right. Well, hey, man, we're really looking forward to it Friday night. Hopefully a late night Saturday. I believe you guys wouldn't play if the winner's game's like 7 o'clock Saturday night, and then game Sunday and the if games on Monday and things like that. And so, man, we're looking forward to being there and watching you and cheering you guys on, and we'll be talking about it all week long. And again, Cooper McMurray joining us here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn, hosting a regional this weekend at Plainsman Park. Man, we appreciate your time. And good luck this weekend, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. War Eagle.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate Cooper McMurray for joining me earlier this morning, talking some Auburn baseball as they had the short exit from Hoover. But, of course, Auburn now hosting a regional and in line to host a super regional at Plainsman Park. If they are to win the regional, we know a couple of years ago they did not. They were a host. They lost to Penn on the first night and then Southern Miss on the second day and went to a barbecue. And so Auburn's trying to change that. And you start looking around at what Auburn's regional is and what other regionals are, and you start comparing on who has the easiest path to a super regional and an easiest path to Omaha. And you found something that ranked the regionals, Christian, based off of numbers, based off of a team's adjusted ratings and things like that and stats from the season in terms of the easiest to hardest regionals across the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and so there's so many different things. Obviously, when you're looking at RPI, you're looking at strength of schedule, you're looking at your record versus the teams that you've beat and their records versus the teams that they've beat and so on and so forth. There's so many different metrics and numbers with so many different baseball analytics, but there's one that I did a little bit of research and I found it and I liked it, and it was saying that Florida State says that they have the hardest regional to get through, followed by Ole Miss, UCLA, and Coastal Carolina. Clemson's at 5th, Oregon State at 6th, Oregon at 7, Tennessee at 8, Georgia at 9, Vanderbilt at 10, and then Auburn is the 11th. It has Southern Miss as the 15th ranked. So one of the easier ones, even with Alabama being in that super or that regional bracket, and then Texas, quote unquote, having the easiest regional for all of the hosts right now.
Yeah, so that again goes hardest to easiest. Florida State at the top. Florida State playing Bethune-Cookman. Also Northeastern. Mississippi State is in that regional as well.
That's probably that two-team race.
Yeah, I would think so. And you start looking, I mean, Auburn is about in the middle. They're just a little bit below, so they're considering it to be one of the six easiest regionals in the NCAA tournament. Also right there is LSU, a team that's hosting Little Rock, DBU, and Rhode Island. There's no big name there, right? There's no other Power 5 team in that regional, but DBU's no joke, so be sure to keep an eye on them. North Carolina is down there with Oklahoma and Nebraska. I mean, I don't believe in Oklahoma. I think they're solid, but I don't think they're great. Nebraska's kind of in that same way as well. Holy Cross is the 4th seed there. Arkansas's regional. I think Arkansas got off pretty good in playing North Dakota State, Kansas, and Creighton. I think you're fine there if you're Arkansas. Teams above Auburn that are more difficult, according to this. Vanderbilt as the 1 seed. You would think that the number one seed shouldn't be in the middle of a list like this of hardest to easiest regionals for the host teams.
But look at Ole Miss as the second team there. I agree that Ole Miss has a hard regional. We talked about this earlier because of Georgia Tech and because of Western Kentucky. Like, Georgia Tech should not be there, and Ole Miss should not have to play Georgia Tech. I think Ole Miss is better than the 10 seed, but that's what they got. I mean, look at Ole Miss in terms of their, according to their RPI. I mean, it was 10, now it's 12. I just think they were better. I mean, their win over Auburn at the end of the season clearly helped them a little bit. And we talked about Coastal earlier. You talked about Oregon State and Oregon a little bit earlier. So, yeah, I mean, I think this list is pretty accurate. And you start looking at the idea of SEC versus SEC super regionals. Believe there are five opportunities for that to happen, where Vanderbilt could play Alabama. You could have Oklahoma. Nope, not that one. You could have Florida play Auburn. You could have Tennessee play Arkansas, Kentucky could play LSU, and Georgia could play Ole Miss. Those are the five chances for the SEC to play itself in a super regional matchup, and you have a couple of other scenarios like Texas and Oklahoma, who could get to a super regional and represent the SEC in Omaha as well.
And as you work your way down, it also has the statistics on the team's strength, hardest to easiest paths to Omaha. And it's Oregon State. They're listed as having the toughest. Georgia at 2, Auburn at 3, LSU at 4, Arkansas at 5, North Carolina at 6, and then Texas and Vanderbilt at 7 and 8. So 1-2 kind of right there. Arkansas is the 3. Auburn down there with Coastal Carolina, saying that it has the third hardest region and the third hardest bracket to make their way into Omaha at the end of the year.
Do you agree with Georgia having the second hardest path to Omaha, with having Binghamton in there, Duke, and Oklahoma State, and then they're paired up with that Ole Miss regional, where if they do beat Duke and Oklahoma State, they would either play more than likely Ole Miss or Georgia Tech or a wild card of Western Kentucky? I mean, I kind of agree that it's not just the most hardest big name super path, but it's going to be tricky the entire way.
It's one of the regionals going into the super that doesn't have, yeah, you feel like they're going to beat Binghamton. That's their one guaranteed win. But then it's almost a little bit more of a toss-up, because you're playing some of the best Power 5 schools in college baseball and their conferences as well. I mean, you talk about Duke. You talk about – who was the other one in their regional?
Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then, yeah, I think they're still very much expected to win that. And then all of a sudden, the All-SEC in Athens Super Regional between Georgia and Ole Miss would be absolutely electric.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a Super between Tennessee and Arkansas could be awesome. That would be in Fayetteville. Auburn could host Florida in a regional or a Super Regional. That would be a lot of fun. Vanderbilt could host Alabama in a Super. I think Texas definitely got one of the easiest paths to Omaha, with UTSA being their 2 seed and paired up with UCLA or UC Irvine. All those teams would have to go to Austin. Yeah, Texas has a path to Omaha, and we'll see if they can represent the SEC in year one. More on that maybe in hour number 2, definitely tomorrow, but we flip to the gridiron coming up in the next 60 minutes.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well and staying dry out there in the Auburn-Opelika area as we are underway here in hour number two during the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast version of the show on our station website where we post the show every single day at ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, we talked about Auburn baseball, NCAA baseball, pretty much all baseball in hour number one as the Tigers and Butch Thompson are going to be hosting a regional at Plainsman Park this weekend, in line to host a super regional in a couple of weeks if they were to win this weekend. Plus, we looked at some of the other regionals, broke it all down, and had a conversation with Cooper McMurray, Auburn baseball infielder. And so that was all in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can check out the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, going to flip it over to the football side of things for a little bit and talk about some of the quotes that Kalen DeBoer had to say about missing the college football playoff last year. Going to give some updates on Auburn golf in there as well. And then also flipping over to the basketball side of things at 3:30 as a couple big time names have announced their future intentions, whether it be back in college, whether it be for a different team. And how does that affect the Auburn Tigers? We'll dive into all of that here in hour number two. And before we get into content in the second hour, we want to remind you that it's brought to you by our friends over at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. And Jacob, Kalen DeBoer, or Alabama's Kalen DeBoer, says that if everybody would have just played Alabama's schedule last year, there'd be nobody that made the college football.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoering had a quote this Tuesday about the playoff last year, and SEC meetings have started down in Destin where all the SEC football coaches and other coaches and things get together and discuss the future of the SEC. And I don't know why this got brought up to Kalen DeBoer, but it did. And it was a quote. Breck McMurphy tweeted it out earlier this morning, and it says, Alabama's Kalen DeBoer on being left out of last year's college football playoff. It says, quote, you wonder what would have happened if other people would have played our schedule, end quote, from Mr. Kalen DeBoer. And my response to this is how Nick Saban of you is what I think of when I look at this, because I understand that you play in the SEC, and we understand that and how difficult it is to play in this conference, and nobody is better at hypothetical games than the SEC. We can make that joke even being in the SEC. But you mean that tough home game against South Florida you had? You mean that game against against Wisconsin and Madison where their starting quarterback got hurt in the first half and you dominated them 42-10? The fact that you, lost to Vanderbilt for the first time in two decades, something Nick Saban never did in Tuscaloosa. You mean that schedule? The one where you hosted South Carolina, where you lost on the road to Tennessee, where you hosted Missouri? That schedule? Yeah, I don't want to hear it. The one where you hosted the Iron Bowl? Your toughest road game was Norman. And you lost. You got embarrassed. You went to LSU and dominated. That was cool, but yeah, let's just say if everybody had played the Alabama schedule, ain't no way the Crimson Tide get left out of the college football playoff if everybody had their schedule. Give me a break.
Well, yeah, and it's not that the SEC, again, obviously speaking with a foot in the conversation, being from the SEC, but the SEC also gets more benefits than everybody else because people now understand the difficulty of the scheduling, right? I mean, it's the same conversation, the same argument that Shane Beamer in South Carolina had at that point, or Ole Miss had at that point, but by no means is Shane Beamer walking around going, man, we should have still been in.
Well, Alabama, it's very simple. You were 9-3 last year. There were teams that were better than you flat out. And basically, plain and simple, don't get your butt kicked in Norman and you go to the playoff. Don't get embarrassed in Norman and you go to the playoff. Don't get drug up and down the field by a mediocre Oklahoma team and you go to the college football playoff. That's on Kalen DeBoer. That's on him. That's on his coaching staff, man. That's the second to last game of the year, probably the most important one up to that point. After you drug LSU, you beat Mercer the week before. Everything was in front of you after dominating Missouri. You bounced back from the loss against Tennessee. You won three games in a row in the most important game to you on your schedule up to that point, and you no-show. Something that rarely happened under the previous head coach. And not that we want to compare, but that's just how this job goes when you're the next head coach at Alabama. We said it for years leading up to Nick Saban retiring. If you don't no-show in Norman, you probably make it to the college football playoff.
Well, you talk about the unfair comparison, but that's what the fan base has started doing before he even played a game.
Yeah.
That was the expectation.
It was a given.
Of, man, you almost don't want to be the first coach. You want to be the second.
Ain't no doubt.
To come in after there's been a little bit of failure, you can come in and resurface, relay the foundation, and that way you can get credit for the upward trajectory. Let's play a fun game really fast. I'm going to rapid fire for you in no particular reason, just these random teams that are coming to my mind in the 2025 season, and I want you to tell me whether or not Alabama beats them. All right.
This upcoming season?
For the 2025 season. Again, okay. This is just completely random.
I'm sure.
Okay. There's completely random teams. I'm not on their football schedule or anything. Florida State and Tallahassee.
They'll win.
Okay. ULM.
Yeah.
I think they'll win. Wisconsin.
They'll win.
Okay. At Georgia and Athens.
Loss.
Vanderbilt rematch in Tuscaloosa.
They'll beat them by 50.
Missouri in Columbia.
Win.
Tennessee in Tuscaloosa.
Probably a win. If that's in Knoxville, I probably pick them to lose again.
South Carolina in Columbia.
Could get dicey. Depends on what South Carolina looks like. That game, I think, is late October. Is that right?
25th.
Let me take a sidestep. What is South Carolina at that point? Is South Carolina relevant, or is their playoff hopes already gone? Because
I have South Carolina being a pretty darn good team at that time.
Hold on. Let me pull up South Carolina's schedule. At that point, let me see. Okay, South Carolina, they open with Virginia Tech. They have Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky. They play at LSU. They do host Oklahoma the week before they play Alabama. Oh, South Carolina's homecoming? That's hilarious.
Worst case scenario, I have South Carolina 5-2.
Yeah.
Coming off back-to-back losses.
Yeah, I think they're alive. I think they're alive, so that could be dicey. Let's come back to that one.
Okay. LSU in Tuscaloosa.
Loss.
Oklahoma in Tuscaloosa.
Very well could be. How about this? They play South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma back-to-back-to-back. Is there a bye week in there anywhere?
There is, in between South Carolina and LSU.
Shocker.
But again, no, these are all just completely random.
Oh, okay. Of those, they will go 1-3 in those three games.
Sure.
Or 1-2, sorry. They'll go 1-2 in those three games.
Okay. The biggest matchup, Eastern Illinois.
Tough one, but, you know, I'll give it to old DeBoer.
And then Auburn in Auburn.
I don't know. What is Auburn at that point? That's the problem. Auburn should win that game, but here you go. So I would give Alabama probably three losses again in 2025, which would mean they don't go over their 9.5 win total, by the way, right? But they have a chance to get back against Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. And this schedule, I would say, believe it or not, I think the schedule is it easier than last year? Are we willing to say that? I mean, you do go to Tallahassee, to Athens, to Columbia, and to Auburn. Those aren't easy games. Now, Florida State's not any good. South Carolina, you hope that they're good at that point. You hope that Auburn's good when they come here. And Georgia will be good because that's the end of September. But their toughest games other than Auburn and Georgia, they play at home. They play Wisconsin at home, Tennessee at home, LSU at home, Oklahoma at home. The schedule's not all that bad.
The toughest part of your schedule is October 18th to November 15th, where it's Tennessee, South Carolina, bye week, LSU, Oklahoma. But if you're saying of those you said of the three, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, there's two losses in there. Even with a win over Tennessee and possibly a win over Auburn, a loss at Georgia, that puts you 9-3 at best.
I mean, I put them between Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU, and Oklahoma 2-2 at best. 2-2 at best.
Which gives you Georgia as your third guaranteed loss and then whatever Auburn decides to do.
Yeah, or if, I mean...
But if everybody played this schedule, how many teams would play to be in the college? Again, I mean, they all
would be in it. I mean, you may as well just expand it to 64 teams, let them all play Alabama schedule, and I'm sure none of them would lose to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, right? Couldn't imagine losing to those two teams. Yeah. Like, what a... But here's the difference, though. Alabama fans will hear this, and they'll get upset, saying, well, Auburn lost to those two teams. Yeah, well, Auburn's not crying about missing the college football playoff because we couldn't beat those two teams anyway. We couldn't beat Cal at our own place. But Hugh Freeze isn't complaining about missing the college football playoff. Kalen DeBoer is just following in line with his predecessor and saying, oh, well, Nick Saban said we should have made it, so maybe we should make it.
We're more focused on bowl games.
Yeah, yeah. To hell with the college football playoff. We want to make it to a bowl game. 2025, man. But I'm glad that Kalen DeBoer is focusing on the right things and, you know, focusing on the past rather than what this year's team is going to be. It's just between that quote and the ones that Greg Sankey's had today, Greg Sankey's been on one this afternoon or this morning, man. He came out guns a-blazing about the college football playoff and about leaving the NCAA. I mean, Greg Sankey woke up and chose violence this morning.
Yeah, he said, I got time for all these questions here this afternoon. He said, quote, I don't need lectures from others about the good of the game. Referring
God,
to
get off my lawn,
ACC
Greg Sankey,
or the Big 12. Yeah, I don't need you to tell me that it's for the betterment of the game, anything like that. I mean, he got into a pretty heated discussion up on stage talking about some of these teams. He said, you can issue your press statements, but I'm actually looking forward to ideas that move us forward. The SEC didn't need the playoff. That was for the good of the game. Don't tell me about the good of the game now.
Yeah, he said the SEC is not, what's the word he used? It's not satisfied. It's not content, maybe. I forget what word. I saw an ESPN article this morning about it where basically he said, we're not settled or whatever he said about the future of the college football playoff. And it's like, sir, how are you not pleased with it? It's going to a 16 team where you're going to have a fourth of the playoff guaranteed every single year.
You could easily have six.
Yeah, that's just the guaranteed spots. Now, I guess that's a question, since the SEC and the Big Ten are
do they get punished for the at-large bids?
Right, could they get more? Would the committee put more? Or would they say, well, they already get four, so we'll find other teams? Kind of like we were talking about.
No, we would have talked it because last year we did the whole rundown.
Last year, that's true.
The at-large bids, Alabama would have gotten a main one, but it would have been LSU.
Like Ole Miss, maybe?
And, not LSU, it would have been Ole Miss. And
it may have been South Carolina.
No, South Carolina was the one that got skipped because Clemson jumped them for winning the ACC tournament. Hmm. Oh, gosh, who was the third team? It was South Carolina, Miami.
Yeah, there was somebody else in there. My question would be,
I think it
though,
was BYU.
My question would be, since it is still a people committee, would they hold that grudge like we talk about in baseball, where we were concerned with a team like Auburn not getting a host because of them being in the SEC and them wanting to make it equal and fair? Will they do that for the college football playoff if the SEC and the Big Ten get those four guarantees? Because my whole argument with that has been the fact that, well, those two conferences are going to get four guaranteed teams in every year, but you can't guarantee that those four teams are four of the 16 best. But there will also be years on the other end of the spectrum where the SEC and or the Big Ten have six teams that deserve it and belong to the college football playoff. But will the people committee, who have no repercussions, who have no punishment, who have no legitimacy, in my opinion, will they grant that?
You mean the No Controller Authority organization?
Well, apparently.
Or association?
Yeah, well, Greg Sankey says he's got people in his camp that are asking why they're still a part of the NCAA. So don't tell me they're not having those conversations and aren't thinking about leaving that terrible organization.
You have to hope that simply, since it is now just rankings-based, that there's more computer stuff than goes into it. But you know that there would still be a... Yeah, we decided to put this team at 14 although the SEC team beat them in week five, but we already have four SEC teams. We need to slide another team in from another conference because we can't give the SEC more.
They would never do this, but if they are going to go to a straight ranking system on the seed lines and they are using other rankings and numbers and things, shouldn't they go away from these college football playoff rankings that they do in October and wait to only have one at the end of the season rather than using their own rankings to make the final rankings? Well, I mean, we had them at 10 a couple of weeks ago, so we got to keep them there. Or would you rather just wait and still use, you know, the AP poll and the coaches poll and all that mess? I mean, that opens up a whole other can of worms.
You know what else won't happen but should happen? You probably know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
How about the first rankings of the year are the college football playoff rankings?
Yeah. No AP poll, no coaches poll, none of that. You can go off of strength of schedule. You can do strength of record. You can look at all those numbers, but don't put the name or the number beside the name until you're ready for it to be official.
Yeah. You can have a record. You can have it's 5-1 versus 5-1. Or you could even say that it's generic, a top 15 matchup or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
but I even think
happen.
That's going too far because, again, that's what generates so much hype. That's what creates so much viewership because you can say, oh, it's a top 10 matchup in Jordan-Hare. But that being said, again, it would never, ever happen. But just from a simplicity standpoint, so that way no team can sit there and go, yeah, well, I beat the fourth-ranked Florida State Seminoles in Ireland. Give me a top 25 win, and that now goes on my resume for the entire year when Florida State can't get past the 50-yard line.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. But don't worry, Alabama's going to beat that Florida State team, and they're going to beat their chest about it as a Power 4 non-conference win, even though Florida State's going to go 5-7 and not even win games in the ACC, which is the worst Power 4 conference in college football. But
no trust in Gus Malzahn?
None. I've been there, done that. So a lot of quotes coming out of these SEC meetings. Kalen DeBoer, Greg Sankey, and more. We'll probably dive into these a little bit later in the week as well. But we need to get to our first break here in hour number two. Phone lines are open, by the way. If you want to come in, be a part of this conversation or any other conversation, you can do so by giving us a call. 334-321-1390. A number again, 334-321-1390. Shoot us a text in the text box as well at 334-784-1067. We'll give you some updates on Auburn golf. Plus, we'll flip over to the hardwood as well. Lots of college basketball news. That's all coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. You can call in and be a part of the show. They're open for the rest of the show, 334-321-1390. And we get to John in Auburn. You're on the line. What's going on, my man? How are you?
Hey, doing well. I've been in and out of coverage today, so if y'all have discussed this already, my apologies. Here's the part about all this with, you know, if they're going to reform the SEC championship model and have 3-play-6 and 4-play-5 and to get your third and fourth automatic. Here's why I'm a little confused on that and wanted a little bit of clarity. So what's to decide what ranking really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are? Are we using conference standings? Because if we are, what's the value of non-conference then? And if we're not doing it that way, then we're having out-of-conference schedules dictate an SEC kind of play-in challenge. So has there been any thoughts on that one way or the other?
Yeah, I think that's the concern, John. And what you're referring to, I believe, is what we believe is going to happen is that 16-team playoff where they've talked about the play-in for the top two teams in the SEC get the bid, and then the other two would play another SEC team in a championship sort of game to get in. And I think you're exactly right, and that's the SEC's argument or concern that they've created for themselves, which is ironic. But it's, well, they want to add another SEC game and make it 9, and then you're right. Why would you play a Florida State or a Wisconsin or a Baylor or a California or anything like that if it's not going to benefit you and only hurt you if the SEC is getting automatic bids? I think right now it's beneficial because it helps boost your strength of schedule, your strength of record, and just your resume. But in the situation that you presented, which I believe is going to happen, you're going to see these games disappear off the schedule. And if you've noticed, John, they already are.
They already are, and if that's going to be the case, I could almost see a better argument for just going straight conference games and doing it like you did the COVID year.
Yeah, and you very well might. I mean, they may leave a game or two of like the Mercers and you or South Alabamas of the world on there just to continue to help those programs try and stay alive. I'm in a very small camp that I don't think it's the responsibility of the big schools anymore, but you may see a couple of those games stay on for that reason, but you won't see as many of them.
And the problem is, I mean, even from a network perspective, you could be I'm going to make some fun, Vanderbilt. And if you're not careful, you know, you schedule Wake in a non-conference and an ACC game, and all of a sudden you wake up and you're on the CW, which 27 people get in the country.
I mean, hey, those 27 people are committed, John. They got to go out of their way to find the CW.
They are. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John. And he brings up a lot of good points and ones that the SEC is discussing right now in these SEC meetings. But it just kind of hit me. It's like the SEC is complaining about an issue that's coming down the road that they created. They're like, well, if we're going to have four teams automatically in, we can't be playing these non-conference games. That's just going to hurt us. You're the ones that presented it. It was your idea to have these conference games or these conference automatic bids. And so this all plays into this idea that we've been debating for so long about the conference having a 9-game schedule rather than the 8. That's going to happen. It just depends on when it's going to happen. But these are problems that the SEC has created that they're now complaining about.
You think that the 1-6 would easily just be on the SEC schedule simply because, again, why would you host whoever when you can play a Mercer or a UAB or a Troy type team?
Or just not play at all.
Or not play at all rather than, yeah, it's definitely going to be Southeastern Conference games only. I think that's also why you're going to try and get 9 games, so that way there's not so there. Because otherwise, there's 4 teams that are 4-4 in conference play.
And not to interrupt you, but something that you've brought up before is the fact that these play-in games is an extra game on top of an expanded college football playoff. It's just longevity. It's more games. Why would you want to play another Power 4 team or another Mercer or something like that if you are going to be in the position as a 5 seed to play a play-in game? You've brought that up before.
Yeah, and again, the SEC, in my opinion, it's going to turn the SEC championship is going to turn into a day-long event where there will be 2 games inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. There will be the 3:30 game, that is the 3-6. There will be the 7:30 game, that is the 4-5. The 1-2 will not play an SEC championship game, and they might be called, or they might just be crowned regular season SEC champions if it's whoever was going to be the number 1 overall seed in the SEC. It's just going to turn into that way. You're not going to have the top teams playing in Atlanta at the end of the year anymore.
You could have 1 game in Atlanta, 1 game in New Orleans. I don't know if they'd put both in the same field, the same stadium.
And no way that they would do it to where the higher seed would host, right? I feel like that would be a little...
Oh, to do it on campus? No, I wouldn't think so.
That's why I think it would be one of those...
So.
You want to know how to make money? Make that like a regional game, or make that like one of those all sessions where you just go and you can stay for the 3:30 game, you can stay for the 7:30 game.
I feel like it's more difficult with football just because of the attendance compared to a basketball or baseball game. You could if you spread them out enough, but that would make too much sense. TV wouldn't do that. That'd be the biggest problem. They'd put 1 game at 3:30 and the other at 7, and there'd be a 20-minute crossover to where you just get screwed because that's what TV likes to do.
Or they'd play it to where, they're at different locations, and it's like college basketball where, sorry, you're going to have to miss the first 8 minutes of the
first
quarter.
Yeah, they would do that because, you know, why do it to the benefit of the fans? That just makes too much sense. We'll give you an update on Auburn golf, plus talk a little basketball. Thanks to John for calling in. We're back after this.
On the line with Jacob Goins. on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, and a lot more to get to in the basketball world is where we head now, as there are so many things and so many pieces of news to go over the last several days with the transfer portal and the NBA draft and stuff like that. Do want to mention quickly, though, Auburn men's golf was competing in the NCAA tournament. They went up against an old foe in Virginia today, where they had a lead, and then it kind of just fell apart for them down the stretch, Christian. A couple of guys performed pretty well. The team kind of struggled as a whole, and they just weren't able to get it done today, so they see their really incredible run yet again come to an end.
Yeah, the course was playing tough all week, and again, this was all of the, like, the team rankings to get to the top eight to play the match play where you go up against each team's best. It was Auburn and Virginia. Tell me if you've heard this story before. But Auburn, again, just it was a tough course, and you could see that Auburn struggled on certain days, on certain holes. And, yeah, Koivin dominated, and then you had a couple other guys that were trying to make a run on the back nine, but they end up losing 3-2 over Virginia. So yeah, their tournament and their opportunity to go back to back has come to a close. However, shout out to Jackson Koivin. Yes. I believe has already confirmed that he will delay everything that I'm about to say and return to Auburn for his junior year. But finishing in the top 10 of the individual tournament, again, as you were doing your team throughout this past weekend, a top 10 finish gave him his final point, his needed for the accelerated tour card. And so basically, when he's done, go to tour.
Yeah, he got his PGA Tour membership card.
I basically, mean, he an accelerated card to where he does not have to Corn Ferry Tour. He does not have to do anything like that. Because of what he's been able to do in college golf, it's basically when he wants to call his college career over, there's a spot waiting for him in the PGA.
And I'm glad that that exists. I know there's been a lot of controversy in the golf world about how you get there and how you qualify and stay qualified and things like that. And we're not going to go super in-depth there. But I'm glad this sort of system exists to where the PGA Tour recognizes the fact that, okay, if you are that good in Division I big-time college golf, you're going to be good on the tour. Like, good golf is good golf. I don't care who you're playing, where you're playing. Good golf is good golf. And so Jackson Koivin is in that category. He did earn that card. And so whenever he does decide, like you said, to call it a career at Auburn and go start playing professionally with the, of course, stresses and luxuries that that comes with, he is qualified for that. So shout out to him and Auburn men's golf, as they were one of the best, if not the best team all season long. I would say probably disappointing with how they finished, but winning it all last year and getting back close to it again this year, shout out to them for an incredible season. And so we flip from that to basketball now officially, where there's a ton of news going on, and one that we didn't have on the rundown that I think is kind of important that we should probably address is what On3 tweeted about 10 minutes ago, Christian, from the official On3 X account. It says in big, bold capital letters, report: Auburn's Bruce Pearl is being floated as a potential candidate, hold and pause for effect, for Tommy Tuberville's Senate seat. Yeah, I said that right. According to On3, a report from them 10 minutes ago, Auburn's Bruce Pearl is being floated as a potential candidate for Tommy Tuberville's Senate seat, according to On3 and according to Burgess Everett, who is Congressional Bureau Chief, former reporter. I mean, he's kind of all over the place at Capitol Hill, or on the Capitol. I mean, what? Like, if you're in, we're going to keep this non-political as much as we can. For those of you that are in the Alabama political landscape, Tommy Tuberville, of course, has been the Alabama state senator for a while. It has been all but confirmed that he was going to be running for governor in 2026. He and his camp confirmed that today. So Tommy Tuberville will be running for state governor in 2026. And according to this Burgess Everett guy and On3, in this article that I'm reading, is the fact that once Once Tommy Tuberville announced that he was going to be running for governor, would no longer be state senator. It says that a name was floated as a potential replacement for his U.S. Senate seat, and it's Auburn's head basketball coach, Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, it says that he addressed with the rumor, saying that he didn't think Pearl would end up running, although it says that
Tuberville addressed it.
Yes, saying that he didn't think Pearl would end up running, although one of the party's publications said that he was planning on doing so. Tuberville also said that he would encourage Bruce Pearl to stay on the Plains after leading the team back to the Final Four, also noted the difference in pay. And, yeah, what a wild concept. When we first saw it over the break, literally 3 minutes ago, it said, report Auburn's Bruce Pearl being floated as a potential candidate. We both said, wait.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Who's in the conversation now? What's happening here? And this is after Bruce, just a couple of weeks ago, basically saying that I'm not worried about going anywhere else because, again, there's not too many years that are still on the coaching side of things. And so, what a weird report. I mean, not a weird report, but just a weird concept of...
Well, I'd call it a weird report. It's definitely different. I mean, when you hear the words and see the words, Auburn's Bruce Pearl being floated as a potential candidate, you're like, oh, no. Here we go again.
Yeah.
But this is something completely different. And look, it is very, very well known with people in the Auburn fan base, in the college basketball world, or pretty much anybody that has social media, including X, formerly known as Twitter, that Bruce Pearl is very passionate about the things that he believes in. He's very passionate in his political beliefs, his religious beliefs, and he has gone as far to go to Washington and talk about these things and fight for the things that he believes. And I think that's a huge deal. I think that's extremely important. I mean, I think that is one of the greatest benefits that we have living in the country that we do. And I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with anything that he has said or what he fights for and things like that. I just appreciate someone practicing the rights and using what God gave them in this country to do what they want to do. But this is a completely different step for somebody like him. I don't know if he would do it or not. I don't know him well enough to speak on that. But, I mean, if he did, I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world, given what we know and what we've seen him, especially in the last, 18 months or so, and what he is and how he has picked up his social media presence in terms of his political and religious beliefs. Wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to me.
No, definitely not. And again, regardless of what side that you believe, if you disagree, the fact of somebody being able to practice and exercise that, and somebody that obviously has a passion for making a change, and again, a coach decides to be a coach to make a change in players. And we've had so many players talk about that once they've left Auburn, about how it's been so much more than just becoming a basketball player. It's becoming a man, an Auburn man, and becoming someone who feels like they've now found themselves, found the reason of their living. So many different quotes, again, so many different compliments to Bruce Pearl. What, is there more?
No, I was going to make a comparison.
Oh,
no, I mean, finish your thought. No, I was going to make a comparison.
I was just going to say, again, it wouldn't be anything crazy just to see, just because of the passion that you were mentioning for trying to do what he believes in.
My comparison is Nick Saban retiring from coaching and now fighting for NCAA and NIL and things like that, going to Washington and speaking to Congress about all of that. I mean, you can tell that it means a lot to Nick Saban. This would mean a lot to Coach Pearl. And if he decides to do that, then more power to him.
On a halfway comical note, one of the comments says, at first I was worried about players leaving to my rivals. Now I got to worry about my coaches leaving for politics.
I mean, what a world that we live in. What a world.
Might be the first time anybody's ever tweeted that. I mean, that's...
It's, yeah, that's maybe one of the first. And yeah, Fox News tweeted it out a little bit ago that Tuberville has announced that he's going to run for governor. So there you go. There's some political news that you didn't know you were going to get on this station today. And it's Auburn sports related. So there you go. Not on the rundown, but it's news that felt was important. Some things that we did have on the rundown, Christian Griffin, we had a lot of things in the college basketball world. We had basically a trade in college basketball go down. We've got NBA combine or NBA draft stuff with guys pulling their name out. Florida is going to be the best team in college basketball next year. But the big one right now, PJ Haggerty committing to Kansas State. Of all places. That's big time stuff.
It said that he was definitely the front runner, but again, that news took up a little bit of steam in the Auburn world because it said that Auburn would pursue Haggerty, again, the Memphis guard, if Todd Pettiford were to keep his name in the NBA draft. Again, he has until tomorrow night at 11:59, I'm guessing that's Eastern time, to make his final selection, to get the final pieces of advice. He's worked out with Brooklyn, which I know scared some people just being the Brooklyn native. He was up in Toronto. He's now working out with the Atlanta Hawks. Has maybe one or two more, but only has about a day and a half now to decide if he's going to pursue his dream in the NBA or if he's going to wait and push pause on that for one more year. PJ Haggerty committing to Kansas State shows you that they were willing to give him what he was asking for, which was basically what Nico Iamaleava was asking for, right around the $4 million mark. But reading between the lines, and I guess jumping to a little bit of a conclusion, it makes you feel a little bit better as an Auburn fan because that initial news didn't continue to spark up. It kind of fizzled out with the choice that Haggerty made.
I mean, Auburn wasn't going after him just because he was a big name. They were going after him because he's one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
He was AAC Player of the Year at Memphis a year ago, a consensus All-American. And if you remember, this is a guy that averaged almost 22 points a game. He was ranked second in the portal and a guy that dropped 42 points on Wichita State in the AAC tournament. Like, this kid was legit. And yeah, for him, not only to pull his name out of the NBA draft, but then to go to Kansas State. It's like, man, they dropped a bag on him. There ain't no doubt. But you're exactly right. It's the idea that Auburn didn't land him. And we're not saying that it's the only reason Auburn didn't get him, but it seems like it's a good sign that he chose Kansas State where he can go and be the dude in case Todd Pettiford does decide to pull his name out of the draft.
It would be a whole lot scarier if there were reports that PJ Haggerty was on campus for Auburn today.
But if that were to be the case, which it's not since he has committed to Kansas State, but if that had played out that way to where Todd Pettiford stayed in the NBA draft and Auburn was going to get PJ Haggerty instead, I'm okay with it.
Yes, but just simply speaking from Todd Pettiford terms and how, again, one of the most beloved Auburn players you feel like of recent time, and he's been at Auburn for one, hopefully, 2 years, and again, news like this continues to make you feel better selfishly, I guess you could say, that he will be playing inside Neville Arena, and more news that gives you more confidence on his return is the fact now that guys like Yaxel Lindenborg from UAB transferred to Michigan, also guys like Alex Condon, who is staying at Florida, which is why you're saying Florida will probably be one of the most talented teams, if not the most talented team in college basketball, arguably now with Michigan and probably Kentucky right in there as well. Carter Knox, those three guys in the past couple of days have all removed their name from the NBA draft. And this is a tweet from Jonathan Wasserman, who is one of the big-time draft guys for Bleacher Report. He says that Lindenberg, Condon, and Knox decide that NIL/NCAA stardom/2026 draft opportunities is more important than gambling on maybe going in the 20s, and it makes sense and will continue to make sense for potential first-round draft picks. You feel like you're continuing to hear more about it. The college game is better than it's ever been. And for a majority of these players, unless you're a lottery pick, playing another year in the NCAA when the game is so competitive, the viewership is so high, and the NIL is just right there in front of you, unless you're going and getting a top 15 spot where it's, hey, you're going to be on our bench, you're going to be in the starting lineup for day one. Go play another year, and we'll talk next year.
And for guys like you and me, and for so many people who are fans of the NBA, you hope that this makes the NBA product better over time.
Yes.
And it will. It absolutely will. When John Calipari and others were running in the prime of one and done, the NBA saw some of its worst basketball. Like, you hear all the time about how Miami was the dominant team and then it was always Cleveland and Golden State every single year. Those teams were good, but if you watched the NBA during those years, that decade or so, the rest of the league was terrible.
The product as a whole was garbage.
It was horrible. I mean, it was so bad because there were so many young, immature, raw players in the NBA that were going to be good. They just didn't develop properly or long enough before they went into the league, and it just didn't work out. The product in the NBA was suffering because of it. And so, not that a ton of people around here are massive NBA fans, but for those across the country, that is my hope, is that these guys staying in college, raising their draft stock, making a little money, and then going to the NBA is hopefully going to raise that product as well.
You feel like, again, there's no way that it can't. This is the first year where, again, the first guys of the NIL era are no longer in college, or at least a vast, vast majority of them are now officially making their names into the NBA draft because of either graduation or trying to pursue playing in the National Basketball Association. It is a completely different league, and now you're having those guys that have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of college experience.
Not 4, not 5.
As Devin Cambridge, what did he get? Number 7? Is that what I just heard?
17.
Yeah. But again, you've now have guys that have played 3 or 4 years starting at some of the top places in college basketball where you feel like their game will transfer so much better than simply the guys that can compete at one level or have that one pure thing that they're able to do rather than a guy that's polished all around.
I know we got to get to break, but you slipped it in there a little bit ago, the fact that Alex Condon coming back to Florida, pulling his name out of the NBA draft today. Florida's going to be nasty, folks. They're going to be really, really good. And the fact that Todd Golden is still their head coach, the fact that Boogie Fland is now there from Arkansas, Alex Condon is coming back, Ruben Chinyelu is coming back, guys like that. Yes, you lose Will Richard and Walter Clayton, but they pick up Boogie Fland, they pick up A.J. Brown from Ohio, and you bring back 3 of your 5 starters from a year ago, Florida's going to be really, really good. And just go ahead and prepare for it. I don't think Todd Golden's going anywhere. So Florida's going to be an awesome team in the SEC. Auburn hanging around top 15 no matter where you look. And so that will obviously rise, and hopefully so, if Tahad Pettiford decides to come back for another year. We got to take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll wrap it all up after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a good show today. Been a good comeback show, as we were not here yesterday with Memorial Day, but we are back today. We're back the rest of the week as well. And if you've missed any of the show, we have talked a lot of baseball in hour number one. Also talked with Cooper McMurray from Auburn Baseball in hour number one. And then here in hour two, we had some fun conversations on quotes from SEC meetings from Kalen DeBoer, Greg Sankey, others like that. Had a couple of phone calls, and then just talked about some basketball news as well in the college game. And so it has felt kind of like a free-for-all Friday, but
sure.
With us not having one yesterday and all the news out there, it was a good show. So if you missed any of it, Be sure to go and listen to the podcast version on our station website at espnau.com. I'll have that put up there for you in just a little bit. Tomorrow's show should be really, really fun. It's Wednesday, which means we're going to have Double D in hour number two. Get to talk to Daryl about some of this basketball stuff and some of the football things as well. Another recruiting weekend is coming up for Auburn and so for football, so we'll talk about that. And then in hour number one, we're going to have a baseball power hour with Lindsey Crosby. He'll be joining us in the studio from the barn. And so we'll get to talk to him about some Auburn baseball, a little Braves baseball in there as well. So tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll get to talk to him about if you can go back and listen to it. End of the first hour on Friday, we called an Acuña bomb.
We did.
On the very first pitch.
Yep.
So we now get to talk to him about it and why there wasn't entertainment purposes only Monopoly money put on it.
Yeah, Andy, did you take something on that, my friend? I hope you did. I hope you listened, because we were right. So Lindsey Crosby joins us tomorrow along with Double D and Daryl Dapridge. We'll have a lot of fun. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.